Thank you, Rob. Tim, alcoholic. Okay, so we're on page 535 tonight. Our story title is A Late Start. And we don't know the author's name, but she's done a fabulous job with giving us age references all throughout the story. Knowing that it's a fourth edition story, we can extrapolate a few things and get oriented chronologically pretty easily, actually. So another thing that we like to do is to kind of think about why this story would have been chosen above another one. And obviously with the title, A Late Start, refers to her age. She came into AA at age 69. She actually tells us that in the story. So that's great, because then that allows us to come up with her approximate date of sobriety. It's 1994. Another reason why, beyond the late start that I think this story was chosen for, the way she develops a spiritual awakening that we see very clearly at the end of the story. So age and her spiritual experience. Okay, let's go. It's been 10 years since I retired, 7 years since I joined AA. Now I can truly say that I am a grateful alcoholic. I am a 75-year-old alcoholic. For 55 of those 75 years, I led what is known as a normal middle-class life. Alcohol had as little part in it as candied yams. Nice when there, but unmissed when absent. The home in which I grew up included two loving parents, one older brother, a constant flow of house pets, riding horses, and friends who were welcomed. Discipline in our house was strict, but not out of line with the thinking prevalent during the first quarter of the 20th century. Certainly, I don't consider that I was in any way abused. I attended private school and later a Midwestern college. I married, had children, worked, experienced the pain of the death of my parents and of a child. Knew too the pleasure of real friends and financial success. I enjoyed horseback riding, swimming, tennis, and had quiet evenings filled with children, books, and friends. So she gives us a little more detail there, but even without the detail, we could have been able to figure out that she was born approximately 1926. What happened to me somewhere between the ages of 55 and 63? I have no idea. Was life too much? Did some latent gene suddenly take on a fierce life of its own? I don't know. What I do know is that at 65, I was a crawling, dirty maggot of a woman, willing to tarnish all I'd worked for and to desecrate every dear relationship I had. I know too that through a wonderful set of God-guided circumstances and people, I was led to the only possible course of behavior that will keep me sane, sober, constructive, and happy. I was 20 when I had my first drink, and although I liked the taste, I didn't like the way it made me feel. I didn't drink until I was in my early 30s and thought it made me seem cool and sophisticated. During these early years, a couple of drinks were enough, and I often nursed one scotch on the rocks for a full evening. When I was 35, my 12-year-old son was diagnosed with an incurable cancer, and within a few months, my husband demanded a divorce. For the following 5 years, while my son lived, I seldom drank and never drank alone. Agony, fear, hurt, and exhaustion did not make me a drunk. Happiness opened that door much, much later. So I thought this was interesting in this paragraph where she, in the very beginning, where she says, when obviously her first drink is at age 20, I had my first drink, and although I liked the taste, I didn't like the way it made me feel. That's opposite of what we've heard other authors say in the big book, that they didn't dig the taste, but the effect was what they went after. And the other big thing that stuck out for me was the last sentence of that paragraph. Happiness opened that door much, much later. She's making the point that when her life was very challenging, that was when the time that the drink did not become a problem for her. She's referencing to later on in her story when it's in a much better state, that that's where the alcoholism progresses. During my mid-40s, my interest in alcohol began to gain momentum. Although I had continued to work, I had otherwise isolated myself to care for my son and his younger sister, each of whom required a special dose of stability, love, and security. Soon after my son's death, I made a decided effort to re-enter the adult world. My debut encouraged my drinking. It was not yet obsessive, but drinking became more and more a part of my daily life. I no longer entertained without serving cocktails and seldom attended gatherings where liquor wasn't provided. I always managed to find the post-activity drinking crowd, whether it was after dog obedience training or an oil painting class. During my late 40s, it was not unusual for me to have a drink alone in the evening, although there were still many days when I didn't drink at all. Any event was an occasion for excessive celebration, and there were increasingly frequent weekends when I drank myself to a hangover-creating high. Nevertheless, it was during this period that I received a major job promotion. So now we're going into her happy state. We're already seeing her progression, but we're going to shift from the divorce, the death of her son, into more positive circumstances. I was 49 when my second husband and I were married. Years before, we had dated through high school and 2 years of college, but then were separated by World War II. Each of us had married elsewhere, divorced, and 30 years later, we met by chance. We had 10 years of laughter, sharing, and wonderment, well laced with martinis and scotch on the rocks. By the time I was 60, anyone wise in the ways of alcoholism would have known I was in for big trouble. Happy plans dissolved into pouts, arguments began, and meals burned. Hurricanes of anger rushed through our once happy cottage. We agreed we were drinking too much. We tried the switch technique, the time control schedule, the drink only on weekends ploy. Nothing worked. Between us, we were badly damaging our budget. My husband lost his job, and then for 2 harrowing years, I watched him die of alcoholism. But I learned nothing from his death, and my drinking escalated as I bottle-fed my sorrow. So a couple of things we can note there. When she references in the first line, I was 49, that would mean it's about 1975. And that then tells us that when she says that by the time I was 60, now we're up to 1985. My early 60s saw me drunk every night and more frequently calling in sick or for personal leave. Life was pure and unadulterated hell. At work, I was often shaking so badly that I hesitated to give dictation because I would have to sign the letters. I made every possible excuse to meet someone for a business luncheon so that I could have a drink or two. As my alcoholism accelerated, my absenteeism increased and my productivity diminished. I bounced checks, pawned silver, mourned, and I continued my drinking. Finally, on one cold winter day, I called Alcoholics Anonymous, and that evening, two ladies took me to a meeting. We had a 25-minute ride in the car, and I remember how good it was to talk about my fear and shakes, how kind they were without encouraging my self-pity. I remember being given a cup of coffee I could hardly handle and hearing impossible promises that would materialize if I would only make the impossible commitment. I did want to stop. The ladies suggested that I go to a woman's meeting the next night, and I did. I had a drink first, of course, and when it came time to identify myself, I stated that my brain told me I was an alcoholic, but the rest of me didn't believe it. The next night it snowed, and I stayed home and drank. That was the end of my first try at AA. Some months later, I invited my daughter and son-in-law for dinner to celebrate her birthday. They found me sprawled across the living room floor, passed out cold. What a mournful birthday present. It took very little persuasion to convince me to go into the detoxification program at the local hospital. I knew I was in trouble. I was ashamed and heartbroken that I had caused her such hurt. 7 days in detox and 8 weeks of really good help from a psychologist, and I was dry, sober, and ready to face the world again. The doctor strongly suggested that I participate in the local AA program, but I would have none of it. I was cured. I needed no further help. A year and a half later, I retired. So we know she retired at age 65. I was enjoying my new freedom and gave myself permission to have a drink only when I was dining out. That worked so well that I made a new rule. I could have a cocktail before dinner and an after-dinner drink. Then I made a rule that said I could serve alcohol to my friends in my home. That, of course, is the rule that sent me spinning right back down into fearful drunkenness. I was worse than before. My self-imposed hell was in my own home, unbathed, in the same night clothes day after day, afraid of the phone, the doorbell, and the darkness. If the clock said 6, I wouldn't know whether it was morning or evening. Days ran into each other in an agonizing blur. I crawled to bed, drank when I came to, and sat shivering in fear of some unknown tragedy that I thought was about to descend on me. I remember wailing because I couldn't make coffee, sitting curled in a corner trying to sort out how I could commit suicide without making a mess. I might have tried, but I was afraid no one would find me before I started to stink. Once again, my daughter came to my rescue, and I checked into the detox program at the hospital. This time, I was there for 10 days. During that time, AA meetings were made available at the hospital. I was genuinely touched by the fact that they were led by a young man in a leg cast and on crutches, especially when I realized that he came as a volunteer. And twice before I left, I was given a leave of absence to attend local AA meetings. Others have stated that they eagerly embraced the AA program. Unlike them, I did not enter the rooms willingly, nor did I find myself immediately at home. However, I had no other option. There was no escape route that I had not tried, none that had not led to another failure. I was 69 years old. I had neither time nor health to waste. For 6 months, I didn't drink, attended meetings, and sometimes read the big book. I went to meetings exactly on time, sat quietly, and left as soon as the meeting closed. In no way was I part of the group. I was not impressed by the sayings and didn't really believe the messages I heard. Then one day I was called on to share and I proceeded to explode. I announced that in no way was I a grateful alcoholic, that I hated my condition, that I did not enjoy the meetings, and that I did not leave the meeting refreshed. I found neither ease nor growth in the fellowship. My healing began with the arrogance of that statement. One of the women came to me after the meeting and told me I was about to go out. She offered to help me find a sponsor and led me to exactly the person I needed. This lady had 19 years of sobriety and, even more important, a wealth of experience in helping and guiding alcoholics through the steps of AA. By no means do I intend to imply that I leaped with pleasure into the program. I stalled and resented and refused to accept each step as it came up. I felt challenged by each new concept and resentful toward my sponsor, who seemed intent on reducing me to abject stupidity. It was years before I realized that I resented the changes the program asked me to make, not my sponsor. With the patience of unconditional love, she led me to acknowledge first that I was powerless over my alcoholism, then that others before me had conquered their illness, that there had to be some sort of source of help higher than any one of us, and that together we were a well of strength on which any one of us could draw. From that point, it was not hard to venture into the realization that a power greater than any one of us existed. And with that understanding, I found direction to my own special higher power. On that spiritual foundation, I began to build a new life. The third step was the most difficult for me, but having completed it, I found that I could face or untangle the other steps if and when I could remember to relax, trust the program, and implement the step rather than fight it. Accepting my higher power did not fully change my attitude of resistance. It just made yielding to instruction a more rational and acceptable mode of behavior. For each step, I still had to go through the process of recognizing that I had no control over my drinking. I had to understand that the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous had helped others and could help me. I had to realize that if I did want sobriety, I had better do the steps whether I liked them or not. Every time I ran into trouble, I ultimately found that I was resisting change. My mentor had to remind me that AA is not just a project. AA offers me an opportunity to improve the quality of my life. I came to recognize that there is always a deeper and wider experience awaiting me. Early in my growth, I remember thanking my sponsor for the hours and hours she had given me. She said, "Don't you think that you will do the same for someone else someday?" I replied, "I will never be responsible to or for anyone else ever again." That refusal to make any kind of repayment to the program delayed my offering to be of service in any capacity and consequently delayed my maturing process. Not until 2 years had passed was I willing to act as group secretary. It was 4 years before I was willing to sponsor anyone. Today, it is with real gratitude that I am allowed into the lives of a few women. My own understanding is broadened and deepened by their influence in my life. As the newcomer and I examine each step, both she and I receive new insight and find additional facet to this jewel of sobriety. I'm proud now to be a part of the fellowship that showed me the path up and out of hell. Now I am eager to share my experience as others have shared theirs with me. Small miracles keep offering new opportunities just when I need change and growth. New friends have shown me hidden truths in those sayings that I once found so shallow. The lessons of tolerance and acceptance have taught me to look beyond exterior appearances to find the help and wisdom so often lurking beneath the surface. All my sobriety and growth, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually, are dependent upon my willingness to listen, understand, and change. During my fifth year as a part of my annual personal inventory, I realized that I had not succeeded in developing a spiritual depth in my program. I had accepted what I was taught, but had not gone in search of the private growth that I saw in others. I watched for and found people who take the program with them as they live, work, and play in the real world. Through their leadership, by precept and example, I am finding the daily excitement essential to my development as a person and to my contact with my higher power. I approached Alcoholics Anonymous with fear and hesitation. Then, urged by the dread of what was behind me, I took tiny, delicate steps onto this new path. When I found the footing was firm, each tentative move brought me a little nearer to trust. Confidence grew, faith in my higher power expanded, and I came to recognize a light I had not known existed. Something within me shifted and welcomed a new source of strength, understanding, tolerance, and love. That selfish, withdrawn woman who announced that she would never be responsible to or for anyone ever again now finds sincere warmth in just being available. I count it a privilege to help another drunk. It's been 10 years since I retired, 7 years since I joined AA. Now I can truly say that I am a grateful alcoholic. Had I not become a drunk, I would have become another sober but sad statistic. At 75, I would be a lonely, unproductive old woman watching TV, doing needlepoint in my home without friends, and sinking further and further into an old age depression. As it is, AA has filled my days with friends, laughter, growth, and the feeling of worth that is rooted in constructive activity. My faith in and contact with my higher power shines more brightly than I dreamed it could. Those promises I thought were impossible are a viable force in my life. I am free to laugh all of my laughter, free to trust and be trusted, free to both give and receive help. I am free from shame and regret, free to learn and grow and work. I have left that lonely, frightening, painful express train through hell. I have accepted the gift of a safer, happier journey through life. Yeah, I think those last two paragraphs were masterful in describing a spiritual experience, a spiritual awakening, and a psychic change, ultimately. And I couldn't help but to think about it, and particularly in the very end there, that I was wondering if maybe her profession had something to do with writing, because I did think it was very well written. So enough out of me. Like to hear from you guys.